Ladies and gentlemen, it's season 4, episode 7 of Power T Talk. It's football time in America, so we got to enjoy a full slate of college games yesterday. We're lucky enough to still have two matchups tonight, and then the biggest matchup of week 1 for us is tomorrow night, our Tennessee Volunteers. Before we jump in, I want to give you a little preview of the outline. We're going to talk about Tennessee. We're going to talk a little bit more about Georgia Tech and what they're bringing to the table. We're going to give some injury updates, who's playing on Monday night. We're going to do quick Twitch, predict some game one stats, predict the score, predict our final record for the season, and then we're going to review week one. So we're going to go around the NCAA, talk about the big matchups yesterday, talk about what we're learning about the playoff, and then we're going to talk about what coaches did right, what coaches did wrong. We're going to give some shout-outs to players either that played really well or that need improvement. And then we're going to look at how we did on Pick'em, and we're going to do Pick'em for next week. So we're already looking towards week two. But first, we're going to talk about Tennessee. So let's run through the tee.
You can hear the crescendo of the cheering Volunteer fans rising to the tumult as Tennessee comes racing onto the football field. Wherever you listen, ladies and gentlemen, at Neyland Stadium in Knoxville, Tennessee, it's football time in Tennessee.
All right, Zach, we're going to talk about Georgia Tech. We kind of know what they do on offense, so I want to start there, and then we'll talk about their defense and what it means. So briefly, if you have any important stats, maybe beyond just the type of offense they run, what do you know about Georgia Tech's offense? What are they bringing to the field on Monday night?
So what they're going to bring is trickeration. They're going to bring a mobile quarterback. They're going to run a lot of pre-motion stuff before the snap. It's going to be all about just maintaining your eye discipline and your gap assignment. And I don't want to sound Butch Jones cliche, but that's the truth. These cliches actually are correct this week. They're very good running the ball. They're one of the best in the country at doing that. They can do it with multiple guys. The thing with Georgia Tech that can kind of throw people off is that they just assume they just run the ball well and that's it. But they also are a talented deep ball passing team. They were second in the country in explosive passing plays. So, I mean, that's something to consider here. Their top three wide receivers had yards per catch of 17.1, 20.1, and 30.6. Okay, so they're going to be able to throw the ball down the field. But the key is getting them in third and long situations, though, because their intermediate passing game is terrible. And it's always has been. That's the Paul Johnson offense.
Yeah, I think that there are going to be some times. I'm actually excited about that part of their offense because we need to see if our cornerbacks are ready to be tested down the field. We need to see if we're making more plays. We need to see if we're flashing a little bit more on plays above their heads that they have to go up and make a pass breakup. Georgia Tech typically has some bigger wide receivers or at least ones that know how to go up and get it. So even though they are this triple option run team, there's going to be a lot of, like you said, just sleight of hand at the line of scrimmage, and they're going to get some plays out of that. They are going to test our secondary, and that's what I think we need early on. But more than anything, I think you said it, and it's, again, Butch Jones, coach speak to the max. Eye discipline, wrap up, no arm tackling, make the tackles. And as long as you keep them behind the chains, There's two things you can do to have really good success against Georgia Tech. Keep them behind the chains, and if you force any turnovers, it really throws them off their schedule because they want to be able to run the ball and have that be their bread and butter. If you force turnovers and you get momentum or you get ahead, it really throws them off their schedule.
Yeah, they always have a good turnover rate or turnover margin. They were plus 436 in the country last year, so they're always going to have that. Really, the key to when facing Georgia Tech is getting sacks when they throw the ball that isn't on third down. So if they throw on a 2nd and 8, if you can get pressure and sack them, that's huge because now they're in 3rd and 15, 3rd and 16, and they really don't have that ability to make plays down the field consistently in terms of getting first downs. They can throw over the top of you, but in terms of like being able to consistently develop a passing rhythm, they don't do that. And we also don't know who their quarterback's going to be too. So getting pressure when they do decide to throw and putting him in those third and long situations is going to be really important.
Yeah, and we also – so you mentioned a pass rush, and I think it's going to be it's going to be an interesting test for our defensive ends because we have guys that I actually think will hold up well against the run. Like, I really like what Kongbo can do against the run. We don't know yet if he is going to flash against the pass. We have a lot to learn at defensive end. So with Kongbo, Taylor, Phillips, Johnson, if they're really concerned about the run and stopping the run and any other ones who get in there, is there a chance that if they do do a pass play after a play action, do you think we'll have a chance against their tackles or against their line to get some pressure on the quarterback, or are you worried that their offensive line is really talented up front?
I think we can because they're going to have three true sophomores on their offensive line. They don't have their starting right tackle from last year, and Andrew Marshall. He's not playing in this game. They've only bring back two guys. So I think that's going to be really interesting to watch. Is I think we can get some pressure. Can, you know, hey, they breaking in a new left tackle in Jahaziel Lee, who only had three starts last year. He's a true sophomore. So they could be able to get some pressure, make some plays. Georgia Tech's not exactly known for protecting the quarterback that well. They were 91st in the country in protecting the quarterback when it comes to sack rate. So I think that's going to be really interesting to watch. I think Tennessee can really be able to make plays in terms of getting to the quarterback, flushing him out there, and being able to force bad decisions or putting him in those third and long situations.
Yeah, that's really what we want. And you mentioned it already, but I want to see if you can go a little bit more in depth. Who is playing quarterback? So you and I talked, you know, building up to this podcast, and we don't really know, and that's probably intentional by Paul Johnson. You know, he's been around a while. He doesn't want to give exactly away what his game plan is. But who do you think is going to play quarterback, or is there a difference between the possible guys that play quarterback for Georgia Tech? Is there one you're more worried about?
I mean, they seem to be going to play Matthew Jordan, the redshirt junior. He's been the backup to Justin Thomas the last 2 years, who graduated. You know, all their quarterbacks are basically the same. Athletic, run, tough, can run people over, can get to the corner, and have a deep ball. That's really what they do. I don't think it's going to matter that much who plays quarterback. If they do decide to go with maybe a Lucas Johnson, who's a redshirt freshman who was listed on the depth chart, or, you know, a younger guy, then maybe experience can play a factor into that. Because really for Johnson, experience really matters. We've kind of talked, Daniel, about QD and how we think he's going to be well-suited to this offense and he'll be comfortable. It's actually very important for experience and getting playing time in a Paul Johnson offense because it's all about reads and communication.
And then you talked about their receivers. So the other obviously key part of their offense is the running backs, the different tailbacks that they use. They usually have a bigger guy who tumbles forward and just keeps them ahead of the chains. I think they had a guy suspended, and I think that guy was key, but they always have a stable of running backs. Are there any running backs or tailbacks that they're going to use that you think can just bust big plays? Is there one that's got a burner, or maybe he's tough to bring down? So talk a little bit about the one who's not going to be playing, and then what is left on that team, and is there a big threat there that we think could go for over the century mark against our defense?
Yeah, their B-back, which is the big, burly running back that they like to run up the middle, Dedrick Mills, has been suspended, and he's out. Actually, I think he got kicked off the team, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he did. I believe so.
So, I mean, last year, he had a big year, 771 yards, 5.1 average, had 12 touchdowns. He was their goal line back. That's a big loss for them, and he was their returning rusher. So I think that's a huge blow. They haven't announced a new starting B-back. That's really the key to their offense, somebody who can consistently move the change. The two guys that are on the depth chart right now, Kervonte Benson and Quade Weimerskirch, I guess is how you pronounce that, are both
seriously?
Really... Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Weimerskirch, I believe, is how that's pronounced. So it's going to be interesting to see that. Neither guy has much experience. Neither one had more than 10 carries last year. They do have a freshman in Jerry Howard they're excited about, but he wasn't a highly recruited guy. He's not a big-time four-star, five-star back. So that will be interesting to watch. The guy I would look for is Clinton Lynch. He's a he's kind of their A-back pass catcher. So in Georgia Tech, they've got a B-back and an A-back. The A-back's the outside guy. The B-back's the inside guy. Then they have another A-back, they call it, or a slot back who can do both. And Clinton Lynch is really good. He had 37 rushes for 115 yards last year. That's 11.2 yards per carry. And then last year in the passing game, listen to these stats, Daniel. He was targeted 21 times, 16 catches, 490 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Yeah. That's 30.6 yards per catch. I had to triple check that stat. I didn't believe it. So he's the guy who can take a 5-yard like screen pass and go long. He's the guy they can pitch to and take it 80 yards for a touchdown. That's going to be the key, is slowing him down.
Yeah, so it's not the most talented group in the world, and we know that they just don't bring in talent like that. So I think that there's actually a chance, even with the guys we have out, and we'll get that to that in a second, that I think we can actually find some success against this defense. This might be the type of game where we know Warrior's starting. We know Abernathy's probably going to get some run. This might be the type of game where Todd Kelly is actually a little more comfortable. He can play in the box a little more. He can play center field a little more. And there's not as much straight-up matchup on a nickel or on a tight end. He's probably going to be matched up on the backs every once in a while. But he is going to be playing some center field. He is going to be coming downhill to help in the run game. That might be a situation where Kelly's really comfortable. So I want to talk about, before we get to like who's out, what it means for our team, and what we really think is going to happen, I want to talk about their defense as well. So there's actually some reason to believe that we're breaking in new guys. We're a little bit shorthanded at the tackle position. We talked about all this on the mailbag episode, and we've talked about the offense. We've talked about the guys we're replacing. But there's still some reason to believe that this defense isn't a huge threat to us, and we can have a lot of success running the ball, and especially passing the ball. It seems like Dormady will have the chance to be upright and get in a rhythm.
I agree. I think their defensive staffs can be a little overrated when you look at them. So, like, for example, their defensive stats last year, if you just look at pure yardage and points, is, you know, they gave up 24.5 points per game. That was 39th in the country. The total yards was 401 yards per game. That was 59th in the country. You look at that, you see that they return 8 starters defensively, and I think you say, wow, they've got a pretty good, pretty decent defense. It's not great defense, but, you know, that's pretty solid. But the key with Georgia Tech is they control the ball like nobody else. They're always top 10, top 15 in time possession, holding onto the ball. So, for me, I think I was looking at kind of what Georgia Tech does, and they actually aren't that great defensively. So, for example, they were 88th in the country and 86th in the country in sack rate last year. In terms of standard down success rate, they were 113th in the country. That means getting 50% of your yardage on first down, 75% on second down, converting on third and fourth. Looking at those two numbers, I'm thinking, you know what? Tennessee could probably move the ball against this team if they can slow down their offense.
Yeah, I think so, too. I was actually, I mean, obviously, I was glad to hear that. I picture Georgia Tech as usually having some pretty good linebackers and usually having at least one pass rusher who actually gets after you a little bit. That's just from watching them randomly play the Miamis and Chapel Hills over the years. It doesn't seem like they have that. It really seems like, I mean, given their lack of success in pressuring the passer, we talked about it last week, if there's a game for Marcus Tatum to get in there and get his feet wet along some experienced and talented guys on the line, this might be the one. And I really do think that Dormady will have some time to throw. You know, when you and I started to discuss these stats, talk about what they actually try to do on defense and how good or not good they are at it, I actually started to feel a little bit more optimistic about this game because I've always had faith in the run game. I've just been worried about Dormady getting in a rhythm. And it doesn't seem like their defense is going to put a ton of pressure on us. And maybe they bring pressure and Dormady has to deal with that. But just straight up, it doesn't seem like our offensive line should be overwhelmed by any means.
No, I don't think they should. They do have a good pass rusher in Henri Saint-Amour, who's a pure pass rusher who's going to get more playing time this year. He had 4 sacks last year and limited playing time. So he's a guy I'd watch out for. Keyshawn Freeman had a really good sophomore year but struggled his junior year rushing the passer. He dealt with some injuries. And really, they don't have a ton up front in terms of pure pass rushing defensively, at least in the defensive tackle spot. So I think Georgia Tech should be pretty good against the run, I think, but I really think they're going to struggle in the pass rush, and I think Tennessee can have success maybe going deep with our wide receivers. If we can throw over the top, I believe Tennessee will have the time to do that and can take some chances.
I actually think so too, and I'm glad to know that. Like, the main thing going into this game that's been on the forefront of our minds is, what does this triple option mean? You know, this is totally different. It's nice that it's the first game of the season, so we've had time to prepare. You know, we hope that none of the blocks injure our guys. Like, we know all the stuff to expect with Paul Johnson's offense. It's worked for a long time. It's worked at multiple different schools. I enjoy watching it. I don't enjoy playing against it. So we kind of have moved past that and started to think about, okay, there's more to the game than that, and what can they do defensively? And it looks like we should have some success. And it looks like it'll be a nice mix of, this is a real team. This is an SEC or ACC team. This team beat Florida State recently. But it's not a team that's going to overwhelm us. It's a team that's going to give us a chance to make plays on the ball in the secondary. It's a team that's going to let Dormady test that arm strength and see what he can do. We're probably going to roll out a little bit. So it's a good mix of, it's a test. It's going to test the discipline of our guys on defense. We're going to see how well we tackle. We're going to see if the corners look different. But it's nothing that should overwhelm us. And we should have pretty reasonable amounts of success against this team now that I dig a little deeper on their defense.
For me, the key, Daniel, is going to be if Tennessee can get off the field defensively, I think Tennessee can control this game. It's a lot easier said than done because of the offense that Georgia Tech runs. But I truly do believe they can stop the option on first down. They can, you know, get them in long second and third and long situations. Do that, get off the field, give it to your running back, give it to John Kelly, let Juwan Jennings make a couple plays down the field. I think Tennessee can definitely control this football game. The question is, and we're going to assume Dormady is going to be good. I really like Dormady, you like Dormady, but we don't know yet. And he's just need to, don't turn the ball over, hit your open targets, be consistent in making your audibles and everything, and he should be fine. This is a good game for him. Big game, but an opponent that he can have success against.
Yeah, I think he just stay within yourself and trust that arm, and I think he'll have success. I think he can make a lot of the throws. It's just a matter of live to play the next down if you think there's question about it. And I think I do think that against this team overall, the biggest thing is just getting them off the field, because if you get to the point where you're just going to have limited possessions for the rest of the game, that's when you start to worry about what's going to happen on offense. So don't let them dictate the pace. We need to play fast. And additionally, I think we have to be opportunistic, and this is the case in every game, but especially against Georgia Tech. When they really fall apart, it's when they lose the turnover margin, because they rely so much on setting the pace. So it's going to be interesting to see if our defense, with some question marks, can create a little bit of havoc and create a little bit of chaos and jump on some fumbles or maybe make a big interception. That totally throws off them controlling the pace and them controlling the ball. This would be a great game for one of those corners if they try to go deep early on, make a play on the ball, get us the ball back, get us a 2-score lead, and then I think we're rolling a little bit. But if we leave them on the field, if they keep going down, then it's going to be to the point where we're in the second half, there's fewer possessions left, and it's going to remain close.
Yeah, I don't want it to be a close game. I want to have control going into the fourth quarter. I think that would be a concern if it is a close game, because I think Georgia Tech could have like a 7-8 minute drive and really take the air out of your offense. I really think if I'm Larry Scott, if I'm Butch Jones, I'm not going to go super fast-paced. I'm going to slow it down a little bit. I'm not going to hike the ball with 25 seconds on the play clock. I'm going to do it with 15 seconds, 10 seconds on the play clock. I'm going to let Dormady look at the defense and read and see what he does, call audibles. I want Tennessee to take their time in this game, let Dormady be comfortable, and keep Georgia Tech's offense off the field. The less I see of that triple option offense, the better.
I completely agree, and I think that before we do quick twitch and we get really, really game specific with stat predictions, I think that brings us to our Vol Nation Threat of the Week. And this is sort of just the story of the week, or became the story of the week as we went into the weekend. The Vol Nation Threat of the Week is Austin Smith is out for the game. So it's simultaneous. Like, suddenly Austin Smith was announced as the starter, and I was actually a little bit excited because he might bring a little bit of pass rush. And I think we've thought since he got here that he was athletic enough to play linebacker, and then he's out for the game. So why is he out for the game? What are the details of that? And again, what does this mean for a depleted linebacking core at Tennessee?
looks like a knee injury. That's all we know. I don't know the specifics. I haven't really got any updates on Twitter or anything like that. The thread, I mean, it's you know, talking about that and everything, didn't really provide any updates. So, you know, I'm going to assume hopefully it's just a couple weeks, maybe like a sprained knee or something. I think what it impacts is, okay, you lose a little depth because you already lose Kirkland for the year. Corte Sapp's coming off the ACL injury. But I think what it means is you're going to see Daniel Bettuli a lot, which is kind of what we wanted anyway, because I think Tennessee's going to run a lot of 4-3 in this game.
Yeah, it's again, just a work in progress to understand what our linebacking core is going to look like. I just was really excited to see Smith, and I was really excited for him to get in the mix in this game where he's going to have some opportunities to make big hits. And then he's gone. It's not a death knell in this game. We can, if we have some people make more plays, we'll actually be okay. But that became the threat of the week because it just went to what we're worried about, which is just attrition on that defense, especially in the front seven. That's what we can't have, and it might affect the scheme. But at the same time, I think that a guy like Galdon could play in this game, and he's such a good tackler that I think he could be fine.
You know, something interesting, Daniel, that I was thinking about just now that we didn't really mention in preparing for the show. What I'm really interested in is, can Cortez McDowell have a really good year? I think he might be the guy that really has to step his game up. No Kirkland for the year. Now you lose Austin Smith. You know what Colton Jumper is, right? We know what he's going to do. He's going to be decent in pass coverage, struggle against the run, get everyone lined up correctly. But I think Cortez McDowell is going to have to be a big playmaker for Tennessee to have a good year.
Yeah, I think that's the one that in all this talk of losing the star and wondering who's going to come in that's not yet a star, like the young guys, Cortez has kind of been lost in the shuffle. And we've loved him since he came to campus. He's so athletic. We've seen him make plays. He's probably at the right weight now that he needs to be. That might be the guy who – I don't think he's going to be a superstar the level of Kirkland. I don't think he's got that, but he can be the stopper that we need on big third downs, on run plays, and do coverage that could make this, could make the linebacking core a little less worrisome. I think that you're right. We hadn't mentioned him, just full disclosure. We had not mentioned Cortez McDowell when we were preparing for this. And I think that's because the top guy's out, and then we were wondering who's going to fill in, and all the talk went to Jumper, and all the talk went to the young guys. Cortez is still right there, and Cortez has played, Cortez is experienced, and he's also pretty darn good if he plays up to his potential.
I mean, we were really excited about him his first 2 years. He's always been pretty solid in special teams and whatnot, so I'm really curious to see if he's improved. I don't think he was fully healthy last year. He dropped some weight to be a little quicker. He's the Will. He's going to play almost every down. He's really going to be the guy that Tennessee's going to have to rely on this year to make big plays. And he's going to have to – something he has struggled with in his career is staying in his gap, staying in his assignment. This is obviously going to be an ultimate test of that in this game.
Absolutely. And I think we've got a little more of an idea of what they're going to try and do against us. I think at this point – we talked about it before the podcast. We could go in depth on how they run triple option, you know, what their bread and butter play is. We all kind of know. We've watched Georgia Tech before, and we've watched other teams that run the triple option. At this point, I'm just so ready for them to get on the field. I'm so ready for football. I really just want to start thinking about what specifically is going to happen in this game. I'm ready to learn more about this team on Monday night. And so I think we should go to Quick Twitch and start to just predict some stats for tomorrow night. So thinking about what John Kelly is going to do tomorrow night, he's going to be a big part of the offense. What do you think the Joker's rush yards will be tomorrow night?
I think the Joker goes for over 100. Georgia Tech's actually pretty decent stopping the run in their past, but a lot of teams like to throw to kind of get ahead of them. So I think he's going to have a really good game. Their defensive tackles are not very big. So they're starting defensive tackles. Their projected weight, and I wanted to make sure I get this here, is 295 and 270. So they're not exactly big. They rely more on their quickness. So I really think that Tennessee could have a lot of success running the ball and making big-time plays, and I think they'll be very successful doing that. I think over 100 yards for him, maybe 125, 130, somewhere around there.
I had it at 127, and I just decided to put a random number on it. So I do think he's going to be over the century mark. I think he gets – I could see it be – I would be comfortable saying it's going to be over 115. Closer to 130, that's a monster game, and we'll just see how it develops. But one thing, I wanted to ask something off of that real quick. Do you think he is a factor in the passing game? So do you think Kelly ends up catching some passes, or do you think he's more just downhill running?
I'll be honest, I don't know. I think he can, but I wonder if maybe Ty Chandler might be more of the pass-catching running back this year. I mean, it's always been a part of Butch Jones's offense to feature the running back in the passing game. So I think he's always going to have a couple catches per game. But I don't think you're going to see like it has been the last 2 years with a guy like Kamara.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But I'm interested to see if he ends up with, you know, 4 or 5 catches around 30 yards. We're just going to start to learn more about what this offense is going to look like and really start to learn who Dormady is most comfortable with. So against this offense, it might have the ball for a little while for Georgia Tech and really is going to try to milk that pace of play and time of possession. Who do you think our leading tackler is?
I'm going to go with a little bit of a surprise. I think a lot of people are excited about him this year. I went with Nigel Warrior. I like what he can bring in this sort of game. He's incredibly quick off the snap. You know he's going to be able to track the ball. If he can just stay in his assignments and... You know, I think he's a guy who can help protect the edge when Georgia Tech tries to pitch it outside and make big plays.
Yeah, I think he's one that not only will he get involved in the box some, but he's going to clean up some things if things get downfield. Hopefully that doesn't happen much, but he is going to clean that up. And that, thinking about that, almost made me go with Micah Abernathy, because I do think that when he gets in there, he's going to be around the ball. But I went with Cortez McDowell, and I originally thought about going with Jumper, but I think McDowell's just going to be around the ball more. Mm-hmm. I think outside runs, he's going to be around the ball more. And he just has always had a nose for the football. So I think Cortez maybe gets to 7 or 8, maybe 10 tackles, and really has a little bit of a coming out party the first game, and might be a guy we're talking about next week when we think about who's going to be impactful in that linebacking core.
Can I ask you a question? Follow-up question there?
Yeah.
Do you think we'll see any 4-2-5 with 3 safeties and play Abernathy, Warrior, and Kelly all at the same time?
I think we'd be more likely to see Galdon in the game.
So you think they're still going to just play with a nickel back and go with Galdon, which isn't a bad option. He's a good tackler, but we know Kelly's more of an in-the-box player.
Yeah, I'm going to bet that we don't, oddly enough. I really like Abernathy, and I really like Warrior, and so I think they're just going to kind of mix it up as they see fit between Abernathy and Kelly. But I think if we see an extra defensive back, I think it's going to be Galdon. I think it's going to be a little bit vanilla in that regard.
I think it would be a great idea to play those three, but if you put Galdon at nickelback and still play him near the line of scrimmage like they did last year, where they put him, you know, outside the defensive ends and put him near the line of scrimmage, I don't think that's a bad option. I just think it'd be interesting since all three safeties have been, you know, the rumors have been they've all had really good, you know, fall camps, if all three of them played at the same time. It'd be a first in the Butch Jones era.
I think it'd be awesome. And I'm not saying these guys are as talented as the guys Florida State and Bama have, but when you watch that game last night, and we'll get to it in a second, they move their safeties all around. They have them in, lined up as outside linebackers. They have them as nickelbacks. They have them out at corner sometimes. They have them everywhere. And it really keeps the other team guessing. And we don't have a Derwin James. We don't have a Ronnie Harrison. We don't have the talent that they have, but we have three guys who we know can play, or they wouldn't be, you know, co-starters. So we have the guys to at least make people guess in that way. I would like to see it, but I don't think we'll see it tomorrow night.
I agree. I think you'll see more Galdon. I just was kind of curious to see if maybe you thought we'd ever see that. It'd be a new wrinkle, and I'd like to see it, especially because that's what more pro defenses are doing, is adding that safety linebacker as the 11th guy. As a star player, but I agree. I think you're going to see more Galdon than a third safety.
So the first TD tomorrow night, who do you think is the combo there? Who do you think scores it, our first touchdown?
I think Juwan Jennings catches a fade route on a long drive, second drive of the game.
So I went with Dormady to Bird, and I think it's actually going to be a little bit longer play. I think we're going to have a little bit of a drive going, and either something like a wheel route where he gets loose in the seam. I think Bird catches the first touchdown, and I'll go ahead and say I think it's over 15 yards. I think it's from a little bit further out.
I like it. I like that. Really curious to see if what Tyler Bird does this year, because I think if he doesn't have a lot of impact on the passing game, he'll eventually get moved to corner. That's where everyone thinks his position is going to be. So I'm kind of curious to see if Tennessee features him in the offense more this year. I hope they do. I think he can be a really good wideout.
Yeah, that's going to be – it's going to be interesting to see what shakes out there because we have a lot of young guys involved. So the final score tomorrow night, the line is – I think we're favored by 3 points, which – that seems tighter to me, but I know that we're replacing a lot. What do you think the final score is tomorrow night?
I wrote down 31-17 Tennessee, late field goal.
So I wrote down 34-24.
So you think Georgia Tech's going to score?
I think they're going to score a little bit. Again, the linebacking just worries me. If there's any sort of sloppy tackling, which we've seen before – there are a few guys that I don't have a lot of faith in their tackling, and if they get loose, they're going to get down and get a field goal, and then I think they're going to have one longer touchdown, unfortunately. So I actually think it's not going to be a blowout, in my opinion. 10 points, that could get really interesting really quickly. I actually originally wrote down 34-27, which was even more interesting, but a 10-point game, double-digit win, I'd be fine with it. I'd really like to see us have so much success on offense that it's just not a concern, but we kind of know how Georgia Tech controls the ball.
I'm really interested to see if Tennessee can prevent the big run plays. So Georgia Tech was top 10 in 40-plus yard runs. Tennessee was bottom 10 defending that. That's going to be the key. Georgia Tech's going to put on some drives. That's going to happen. They're going to have success where they just 4, 5, 6 yards to death, okay? And that's okay. It's just don't give up the big play. Don't give up a 3rd and 13. Get a sack every once in a while. That's going to be the key. Prevent the big plays.
So thinking about the whole season, the whole scope, we're going to learn so much tomorrow night that we're really doing this off of just our intuition of guys that we know a little bit about at this point. But we learned a little bit more about the rest of our schedule yesterday. What do you think the final Tennessee record is? So the final Vols record, how many wins, how many losses?
So like a couple of weeks before the season, I thought 10-2, SEC East champs. I really believe that. Seeing Kirkland hurt kind of concerned me. But then yesterday, seeing how bad Florida was, seeing that Eason is injured and could be out for a while. I hope he's not. I don't want to see that. But it looked pretty bad. Knowing Kentucky struggled against Southern Miss, seeing Missouri, how bad they were defensively, I think the East is again down. If Dormady protects the ball and is efficient and we find a pass rusher, I think Tennessee goes 10-2 and wins the East.
So your prediction is 10 wins.
I think they win 10 games. I think they beat Bama. They'll drop one of the East opponents, but I don't think anyone else in the East truly scares me, especially if Eason's out for an extended period of time. I think Tennessee wins 10 games and goes to Atlanta.
So I think that Tennessee is going to win 7 games.
7? Wow, we are off.
I could see us. So I have it at 7. And then the 8th, which I'm trying to talk myself into, I could see us beating one of Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and LSU. I'm on record saying I don't think we're going to beat Bama.
No, I mean, that's obvious, yeah.
But I could see one of those 4. But aside from that, I'm not feeling super optimistic.
Okay, well, then we have to lead to the next obvious follow-up question. Does Butch Jones get fired? If what you say happens, does he get fired 7-5?
If we go 7-5, I actually – I don't think he would get fired. I don't know why I think that, but I don't think he would. Because I think that there would still be like – like, if we're 7-5 and it's the defense that that struggles and the offense still looks good, then, I mean, we still have QD. We still might have Kelly. We still have those receivers. We still have the offensive line. Maybe we try to fix the defense and he gets one more crack at it.
My question to you is, do you think it's going to be the offense or do you think it's going to be the defense that struggles?
I think it's going to be the defense. I actually have started, and I thank you for this, I've started to think maybe QD can play. And it's not that I didn't think he could, but I've gotten there with that. And I really like Kelly, and I really like the O-line once it's the guys we want.
Right.
I don't have a lot of faith in the defense. I don't see a pass rush. We still need the defensive tackles to flash, though I do like the depth there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The linebackers are just not good.
Yeah, I mean, without Kirkland, that's the biggest weakness on the team.
Yeah, I actually like what we have in the secondary besides the corners. I like the safeties, and I really like Galdon, and we've talked about that. But I don't see the defense being that good, and I don't see how we're going to rush the passer. I think Kongbo can be okay, but I don't see how we're going to rush the passer unless those defensive tackles are just the most disruptive duo in the conference. But I mean, Florida's offense looked awful yesterday. Awful, awful, awful. But I could absolutely see that team with some of their guys back beating us in the swamp. Georgia's pretty good, and if Kirby can coach, they're better than us, and we knew that, but it's a question of Kirby. Alabama's really good. LSU is what it is, but if they stop us, then they're going to score 10 to 15 on us, I think. And then South Carolina, I've thought since we started doing these previews that we might lose to South Carolina. So that worries me a lot.
See, I think this year, I think the schedule plays out really nicely. Okay, so you get Bama on the road. I think we all can say pretty confidently that's probably a loss, okay?
It wouldn't matter where we played Bama. They're going to beat us this year.
I mean, that's true also, okay? So I think that's fair. But think about this. So South Carolina, you think a player. You think they can really make noise. And they look good against North Carolina State. North Carolina State's a good team, and they beat them. Okay, but we get them at home. We get Georgia potentially playing a true freshman at home. Okay, at Missouri and at Kentucky, those are two of the weakest home field advantages. Both teams didn't impress in week one. I think the schedule sets up real nice, and you get LSU a little later in the year coming into Neyland, and LSU's going to have a great defense, but their offense is their offense. We know what's going to happen there. I think the schedule sets up nicely this year. It's a little more broken up. You play Florida September 16th. You play Georgia September 30th. Bye week, South Carolina at Alabama. Then you get to play Southern Miss after November 4th, then you get at Missouri and LSU and Vanderbilt. So I think the schedule sets up nicely. I really like their chances this year. I think Dormady's going to be really good. I like the wide receivers. I think John Kelly's an elite running back. If they can find decent linebacker play, and if Kongbo, Phillips, or Taylor lives up to their recruiting profile, I think this is going to be a good team. I really like the defensive tackles this year. I like the safeties. Mosley and Martin have struggled, but they flashed. They're seniors. They flashed. We know Galdon's good. I think the talent's there to win the East. I think they've got a chance to really be good, and I like Bob Shoop. I still believe in him. I still think he's a good coordinator. I don't think you become a bad defensive coordinator in 1 year. I think he's going to be more exotic with his pressures. I think you're going to see more dynamic secondary play. I really do think Tennessee can have a good defense and win 10 games.
So, again, I think that I actually like Vickers. I think Alexis Johnson is going to be good. I think K-Mac still has something in him, and I think Shy is really good. If those guys are really disruptive and they let the defensive line be a plus, then maybe that changes my thinking a little bit. But I don't have a ton of reason to believe that Justin Martin and Emmanuel Mosley are about to do anything remotely impressive. And I think that other teams have guys that will. I mean, South Carolina has better cornerbacks than us. A lot of teams do. And that's just such a problem because our offense is going to be good, but our offense isn't going to be – we like last year there was a point where we literally, like, if we got the ball, we were going to score. I don't think we're that good. So if we give up these big plays, we can't just turn around and drive 80 yards and score. And you combine that with the fact that our front seven might not be that good, teams can run or pass on us. And that is a huge problem because there are some teams on our schedule that can run or pass. And I don't know. I mean, I'm predicting 7 wins, which is so weird for me because I'm usually super optimistic. But even the 7 wins that I write down, I mean, so I've got the losses as Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, LSU, Bama, which are like kind of the obvious ones. Like, I'm not breaking any new ground there. Maybe the South Carolina game. But we could lose at Kentucky. We could lose at Missouri. And freaking Vanderbilt beat our asses last year in like an inexcusable fashion. And I'm not predicting they will again, but all it takes is like dropping one of those. And then we have to win 2 of the 5 that I'm thinking about, even to get to 8.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm 100% confident. It is a little optimistic. I think, though, the SEC East is bad. I don't think there's an elite team there. I think the schedule sets up nicely. And I'll say it. I think the secondary is going to be good. Martin was good in 15. Mosley was good in 14. Okay? And Mosley, he wasn't great last year. Don't get me wrong. But I thought he was okay. I think he struggled, definitely. But I think he did okay last year. And I think the safeties are going to be good this year, especially with Warriors' improvement. We know what Abernathy can do. Kelly has strengths. I think the secondary is going to be good this year. I think there's enough talent to pass rush, especially if Kongbo can live up to that potential. If Daryl Taylor can be a little stronger, play every down, I think that's going to be a big development. Defensive tackle is a strong suit on this team, despite what happened last year with just three of the top four went out with season-ending injuries for this year's depth. So I think that's going to be good. And I like Dormady. I think Tennessee's actually going to be a better passing team. I don't know if they'll be a better running team without Dobbs, but I think they'll pass the ball more efficiently and make bigger plays in the passing game. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, if Dormady's dynamic, that changes things a little bit. But from what I know now, I expect him to be good, but when I say good, I expect he's accurate. He has an effect in the run game in the red zone, which I think is going to be awesome to see. And I think he can roll out and make accurate throws on the run so we can move him away from any pressure that we might see against one of the tackles. But overall, I don't think he's enough to score every time, but I just think he's going to be above average. And that is good, but a few QBs in the East also have that, and they might have better teams around them.
I think the offensive line is going to be better too. I thought they were pretty solid last year, despite what the thinking is in Vol Nation. I actually think the offensive line was solid last year. They weren't great, but they were solid. I think they'll get better with Trey Smith. I think Drew Richmond's going to improve once he gets back from suspension. I love Jack Jones and Jayshon Robertson together, so I think that's going to be a positive. And I think this is the other thing here for me, Daniel, looking at this team, is I think Dobbs brought a lot of positives. I think he was a great runner, but I think passing-wise, he missed some marks last year. I think Dormady can clean that up and really make an impact, throwing the ball down the field to Tyler Bird, to Josh Palmer, to Jordan Murphy, to Juwan Jennings. I think it's going to be there. And I think Tennessee, like I said, I think Tennessee has the talent to win the SEC East, and I don't really like any other SEC East team. I will say this as a follow-up point. If Butch Jones goes 7-5, Curry better make a move. I'd fire him.
Yeah, it'd be really nice if Kirkland were there. I'm not worried about like the suspensions first game, and I think maybe Austin Smith will be back. Like, it really is for me. It's not a lack of faith in the O-line. The receivers, I just want to see a little more. I actually like the offense okay. It's really the defense for me. And I know we have a whole new crop of coaches in there, so maybe that changes things. And, you know, new secondary coach, new D-line coach. I'm cool with that. But I don't know. We have similar talent to a lot of these teams and maybe a little lower than some. We're just so integrated with this roster that we see a lot of potential. And I love that because I actually do see potential. But we know that Butch's strength is not necessarily in-game coaching and not necessarily getting the absolute most out of a team on game day. I think he gets them plenty excited, but he's not tactical getting the most out of a team on game day. So when you think about the rosters being pretty even, and it's not that there are world beater coaches in the East, but when you think about the rosters being pretty even or maybe a little worse, I don't know if Butch overcomes that. So again, it's just, I mean, we differ. That's probably the biggest difference we've ever had in a prediction about Tennessee's season.
I thought you would go 8 because you've been a little bit lower on this team than I have. And I've thought the injuries really ravaged the team last year. I think if they have a healthy McKenzie, a healthy Reese Maven, a healthy Sutton, and a healthy Kirkland, and a Kamara doesn't miss the South Carolina game, I think Tennessee would have went 10-2. And I've been on record saying that. I think I will say this in your favor, the potential to crash and burn is higher than it has been the last 2 years with no Barnett, no Dobbs, no Hurd. I think it's not going to be, in my opinion, but there's that little potential that it all crashes and burns and it's a horrible season from hell.
Yeah. I do think we'll get a win tomorrow night. So we're both on the same page with that. And I mean, maybe we'll learn a lot tomorrow night, and I'm not going to revise my prediction, but I might be more optimistic that, yes, I'm absolutely certain we get to 7 or 8. So with that, I say we go around the NCAA. We saw a lot of games yesterday. It was a full slate. I was doing some picture-in-picture. I was super excited. Watched the game with a buddy who was a Texas fan, so that was funny. So let's start with the marquee matchups, and I think we got to start with the Bama game. Pretty short, what did you learn from the Bama game? What are you thinking going forward?
The defense is going to be great. The offense isn't right now. And Florida State, if they lose DeAndre Francois for the year, which, you know, we haven't heard that yet, but it does look like it was bad, and the way he was not walking on it was really bad. Florida State's going to be in big trouble if they lose Francois.
Yeah, so they are going to be in trouble. I have to give you some props. Francois looked really good in moments last night, and you were all over him, and I'm afraid he's hurt bad because he immediately went to the sideline, and he was in an air cast 5 minutes later, and he wasn't putting any weight on, and he was taken out of the game on a cart, so I'm afraid it's bad, but not thinking about that, you pegged it a little bit that Francois was going to have some success against them. He's a tough SOB. He got absolutely hammered a couple times. Tony Brown got him one time, and Deshaun Hand got him one time where he seemed like he flew 15 yards, but he still made a good throw. I like him. He's tough. I'm still a little lower on him, but I just hope he's okay at this point. I just hope he's fine. I was texting with my buddy who's a Miami fan, and I said, well, your game against Florida State might have just gotten a lot easier. And I hope that's not the case because full strength, that team could figure it out and still maybe be playoff bound. But I think what we learned the most is that Alabama's defense is still absolutely ridiculous. Their special teams, they still have playmakers everywhere. Mm-hmm. You saw their starting running back and then their freshman Dylan Moses make plays on special teams. They still have a pass rush. Hamilton is really, really good. Fitzpatrick was all over the place. And they just have to hope they can figure out how to run the ball because, once again, they have these offensive linemen who are highly touted. And I'll go ahead and say it. Everyone talks like Jonah Williams is the best tackle in the country. But if he were the best tackle in the country, they'd have a little more success running the ball. So
yeah, that's true.
They just need to figure something out on offense. And it might not matter because their defense is ridiculous and they'll score in other ways. But we'll get to it in a second. They aren't world beaters offensively yet. And I think, quickly, got to give a little bit of a shout-out to Florida State's defense because they're legit. Matthew Thomas looked good. McFadden looked good. Josh Sweat actually looked pretty good. So it was a matchup of stars, and if you score 7 points and make mistakes, you're just not going to beat Bama.
Your boy Derek Nnadi had a really good game, too. I thought he played really well up the middle. There were two more points on this game I want to make. One, if Florida State doesn't
beat themselves,
if they don't melt down on special teams, that would have been a game in the fourth quarter. They gave up a touchdown off a punt return. I think they gave up two touchdowns off bad special teams, if I'm not mistaken. Their defense actually played well despite the two interceptions Francois threw. They just played horrible special teams. Better special teams, and they probably would have had a chance to win that game in the fourth quarter if Francois doesn't get hurt. The other thing is, this is like the third straight year with a bad offensive line pass blocking for Florida State. Jimbo Fisher might need to reconsider a couple things.
Yeah, they have. Actually, their receivers played better than I thought, and I forgot they had Ryan Izzo, and he's a little bit of a weapon at tight end. But, I mean, I know Alabama's defense is good, but there was no protection. They had hand coming free a few times, which you never want. They averaged 1.5 yards per carry. I mean, I don't care who you are. That's just not going to cut it. And they have superstars everywhere, but that line really holds them back. And we were worried about that with Francois, and that's kind of what came through. The one other takeaway I'll give is I give it 4 weeks maybe before Cam Akers is the starting running back.
He should just be the starter now. I don't care if he can't pass protect. You can't do it anyway, so you might as well just play him. And he looked really good. He only had 10 carries for 30 yards, but when he broke free, you could just see the superstar potential.
He flashes. He's confident. He lets you know about it. He's going to be fun to watch. But, yeah, I do think it's pass pro. I think Patrick is so experienced. Akers is the exact opposite. Because even when Akers got in there for a few plays in a row, the whole time before the ball was being snapped, he was still looking at Francois like, what is about to happen? But once he gets the ball in his hands, he's electric. So we learned a little bit. We learned that Alabama's really good. And Florida State, if they have Francois, I could see a path back to the playoff. If they don't have Francois, I don't know if I can. And the schedule's a little lighter, but they play Miami soon, and Miami can beat them. So here's hoping Francois is okay. And a shout-out to their defense for playing well enough to win, but the special team shot them in the foot. So another big game that involved an SEC team was the Michigan-Florida game. And actually, I liked the color on color. I thought it looked really good. I like when teams do that. It was an entertaining game. It wasn't boring. It wasn't dry. And it could have been, given who was playing. What do you think we learned from that game?
Florida's offense sucks.
Yeah, their offense is bad.
Bad. Like, terrible. Like, made me wonder how Jim McElhane was an offensive genius before he came to Florida. Like, that's how bad they were.
Yeah, I think the easy answer to that is he was playing with Alabama players. I know he had success elsewhere, but he kind of rose through the ranks coaching some Alabama talent.
Mm-hmm.
There was a moment or two earlier in the game where Felipe Franks looked good. He completed an over-the-shoulder pass.
Mm-hmm.
He had a scramble away from Rashawn Gary that looked good. But overall, the offense looked really bad. I don't care if they had players suspended. There just didn't seem to be much of a plan there.
Look, I know they didn't have their starting running back in Jordan Scarlett or their best wideout in Antonio Callaway, but their asses got whipped up front. Michigan dominated their offensive line all game long. That was the biggest takeaway for me in that game, is how bad that Florida's offensive line looked with three returning starters. Martez Ivey looked lost all game.
Yeah, that's another one. And I'm going to start calling them out when I see it. That's another one that every time you hear someone talk about them, you hear they have all conference or all American guys on the line. And again, if they did, they would be able to run the ball at all, and they can't. And so they kind of just got to the point where they didn't have a plan. They pretty much got outscored by their defense, which is funny. And the guys that scored on defense, or at least one of them, was a Muschamp holdover. So I think Michigan looked good. I think they dominated up front. The defensive linemen that would come into the game were eager to go against that front, which is a bad sign for Florida. But I will say, I don't know how much we can say right now we learned about Michigan, because I think they were just facing an offense that didn't have much of a plan and didn't have much talent. But, I mean, heck, it's better than looking bad. So Michigan still looks good. And although they didn't light it up, Michigan's young receivers looked pretty good as well.
Yeah, there were a couple drops that shouldn't have happened, but Tariq Black looked like a stud. You know, Donovan Peoples-Jones looks like a really good returner. That was the underrated part of that. He had some really good punt returns because Johnny Townsend can boom the ball at punter. And so he had some good returns, and I think Michigan's going to be fine. You're going to talk about it in a minute. If they can just, you know, figure out what the quarterback situation, they're still going to have a good team and compete for, you know, a Big Ten title.
Yeah, so before we get to talking about coaches and kind of shouting out individual players, one thing we're going to do each week is just talk about what we learned about the playoff, because that's kind of what it boils down to. And we're going to have some interesting ones this year where can this conference get a team in? So based on what we saw throughout last week, and I know we have a couple more important games, but from what you've seen, what have you learned about the playoff? What have you learned about who has a chance, who needs someone to step up to have a chance? What have we learned about playoff contention?
I learned two things in this game, or this week. One was Alabama's pass rush will be perfectly fine, despite what I tried to say. Sean Deion Hamilton was everywhere. Like, their linebacking core is going to be great. They've got a good secondary, so they're going to be good defensively. They shouldn't have to worry about that. I thought their pass rush might struggle a little bit, but that doesn't seem to be the case, I don't think. That was the first thing. And then the second thing was Clemson's just going to – they're going to score as many points as they want to. They're going to miss Deshaun Watson a little bit, but Kelly Bryant looked really good.
Yeah, that's another one where I'm holding off on saying we learned something until they play a real team. But Kelly Bryant did look good. Deion Kane seems like he's gonna kind of step into that role of the receiver at Clemson. So, I mean, again, against those bad teams, all you can do is go beat the heck out of them, and that's what they did. What I'll say is, what are we learning about the playoff? I was super excited at how good Oklahoma State looked. And I like Oklahoma State, but they did exactly what they needed to do. Rudolph got going. Washington had two monster plays for touchdowns. They just poured on the points early, and that's what they're going to do. But then I think a little caveat to that, this team that's lurking a little bit lower, Kansas State looked good, and Jesse Ertz looked really good, and Pringle's good. They have enough playmakers that offense can work, and they can score on Oklahoma State, and they probably have a pretty good defense. I think Kansas State's the team that's lurking that could play spoiler and screw up the Big 12 chances.
I agree. Kansas State looks good. You know what they're going to do. They're going to play good defense. They're going to have Jesse Ertz do a lot of different stuff. It's going to be interesting to watch that. Oklahoma didn't miss a beat. I mean, Akron's not good, but Baker Mayfield looked great. So that was also something that kind of watched there. It'll be interesting to see how the Big 12 shakes out. I think that's the most maybe the Pac-12. I think then and the Pac-12 are the two most interesting conferences this year in terms of who's going to win that conference.
Yep, and we already saw some teams look good in the Big 12, so it's just a crash course, and we're going to see that rematch in the title game. One of our favorite segments each week, and this was, again, Zach's idea. I think it's awesome because we watch so many games. We see so much goofy stuff happen. Our glorious coaching segment of the week. So, Zach, I'm going to let you start. I have a small one that turned out okay, but I'm going to let you start with your glorious coaching segment.
Larry Fedora recruiting Brandon Harris to play quarterback and starting him might be one of the more idiotic things I see this year. That was just – we knew that from the beginning, how dumb that was. Let me give you Harris's stats. Against Cal – against a good defensive, you know, Justin Wilcox is now the defensive coordinator. He's the head coach, former defensive coordinator. Good defensive mind. But let me give you Harris' stats against Cal. 7 completions, 16 attempts, 60 yards, 2 picks.
And that's against, again, Justin Wilcox is great, but that's Fedora's offense against California, to reiterate.
Yeah, and then the backup quarterback, Chaz Surratt, who came in, 18 of 28, 161 yards, a touchdown, ran for 66 yards, and a touchdown. So
that was my initial reaction when you said it. So you texted me earlier in the day, and you said, man, Brandon Harris looks bad. And I swear, It took me a second to realize the freaking Brandon Harris you were talking about. I thought that North Carolina had a different quarterback that they recruited named Brandon Harris, because I thought there's no way it's that guy.
It was. And he looked just like Brandon Harris. I mean, it was, I don't understand. And look, I hate to throw someone under the bus like that, but you got to be smarter than that if you're Larry Fedora. That's just, that's dumb. You can't fix that. He's just not a good quarterback. That's, you can't fix someone who's just not a good quarterback.
And his system, it really requires being able to make every throw and being able to make a snap decision. So, I mean, I understand you want to get as many guys in there as you can, and you want competition at that position, but if you're Fedora, you have dudes on campus. Like, the past two quarterbacks that you've had and groomed have been really, really good, and then one got taken third overall. Like, you know how to do this, dude. So take the guy that you have and let him do his thing in your offense. So there was just no need to go reach for a guy like that, because I trust Fedora offensively.
So which coach do you want to throw under the bus today?
I actually want to throw Jim Harbaugh under the bus.
Oh, and are you going to hot take me?
No,
my,
I mean,
Michigan,
not
Wolverines?
Not terrible. I mean, they won the game, so that's all that matters, whatever. But when they took Spate out, I just wondered what they were doing. And again, Harbaugh does what he wants with quarterbacks, and he's got it figured out. But it was a ball off a guy's hands and then a bad pass. Other than that, Spate really kind of seemed like he had a rhythm and had Florida figured out. And when Okorn came in, they didn't look very good. And they didn't seem like they had some wildly different plan for Okorn to be better. All it really did was get CC Jefferson and that defensive line kind of licking their chops to tackle John Okorn rather than on their heels against a big arm guy like Spate. So it got corrected. It worked, but it was a weird decision to me, and I hope that that doesn't happen throughout the year. I really hope that it's not constantly like, okay, Okorn, see what you got, because I think Spate is enough for them to have success as those young receivers develop, and I think he keeps guys on their heels because he has a little bit of a rhythm and play action. He can throw it deep. And then on the other side, McElwain, he brought in Zaire, and I think it was purely out of desperation and really just trying to get Franks out of there before his confidence got shot. But he didn't really have a different plan with Zaire either. Like, they tried to run a read option. It was just completely stuffed, and then it was just kind of run around and throw it up. So these quarterback switches out of panic, I think Harbaugh was just pissed. But McElwain was panicked, and they didn't really have a different plan. There was no reason to believe it was going to be successful.
I'm 100% with you on Harbaugh, by the way. Just play Spate. He's the best option. There's no need to get fancy. Yeah, I know you're pissed off. He made a bad throw. No doubt about it. But just keep playing him. Let him develop. He's got an NFL arm. He's going to be fine with that talent at wide receiver and at running back. The Florida situation was interesting. So Todd Blackledge and Joe Tessitore, by the way, the best announcing duo in football today. Love listening to those guys.
I actually agree with you.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Tessitore's awesome. Suggested that McElwain punted basically this game away so he doesn't ruin Frank's confidence, and that's why he went with Zaire. I thought that was kind of an interesting theory by Blackledge and Tessitore.
Yeah, I mean, there was just nothing doing in that game. So, again, I see why it happened. If we were in that same situation and we had similar quarterbacks like that, I could see us, you know, bouncing back and forth between them. But I had to mention McElwain, but the really crazy one was Spate. I mean, he didn't play great overall, but I just think he's more of a threat than Okorn, and there's a reason he's your starter. He's the kind of quarterback Harbaugh wants in there. The run game looked really good, so they could have kept humming along with him. So we got those coaching things out of the way. Hopefully nothing too crazy happens in the next couple of days with these games. But if it does happen, we'll call you out in next week's edition. So let's go to the shout outs of the guys that we thought really impressed in week one. So first, we're going to do a player of the week, just overall nationally. Then we're going to do a guy who popped onto our radar or we're keeping on our radar. And then we're going to give a shout out to someone who just needs to improve. And if their team's going to be successful, they really need to improve. So first, who's your player of the week, Zach?
So I'm going to go with Lamar Jackson. That's a really simple answer, right? I mean, that's kind of lame to go with the former Heisman Trophy winner. But he had to play really well against a very feisty Jeff Brohm Purdue team, and he did. He had over 480 yards offense, 2 touchdowns, and I thought this was the biggest thing, Daniel, because I actually watched a lot of that game flipping back and forth between that and Bama, Florida State. I thought passing the ball, he looked fantastic. He made multiple NFL throws, and if he can do that, Louisville could be a player in the ACC this year.
Yeah, when I saw the score, I thought, okay, a little bit of the charm has worn off, and they're just a little bit worse. Maybe they lost guys. But then talking to you, you said that Lamar looked really good, and it just turns out that Jeff Brohm might be able to coach. And, I mean, you see a lot of these blowouts. Like, you see Clemson blow teams out. You see a lot, like Penn State blew somebody out. And you wonder why Louisville with Lamar Jackson didn't. Well, they played a real team. Like, they played somebody who's really good. Not a top 25 team, but a legitimate team. And they got in a little bit of a battle, and Lamar Jackson ends up with over 500 yards of offense and wins the game for him. So what else do you want? I mean, it's not the overall game you would want from the whole team, but for Lamar, he did what he needed to do.
Yeah, and there were mistakes made. I mean, Peter Sermon was coordinating his first game. That, you know, he probably had some butterflies. Jeff Brohm's a good offensive coach. Purdue definitely gave him a tough game, but Lamar Jackson was fantastic, and people have kind of underrated him because of Darnold and Baker Mayfield and Mason Rudolph and guys like that, but Lamar Jackson's still explosive.
He really is, and my player of the week looked as explosive as you can look at the linebacker position. I picked Devin Bush from Michigan. So he had, I mean, he had 5 or 7 tackles, but really what stood out is he had 3 tackles for loss and he had 2 sacks, and there were multiple other times where he was flying all over the field. I didn't see a defensive player that looked better than him yesterday. I thought Derwin James looked good. I thought Payne for Alabama looked good. I thought Deion Hamilton looked good. But I think Bush was the one guy that flashed to me that said, you know, that guy could be an All-American. And he was all over the place. He was licking his chops against Florida to get after the quarterback. He's so fast to be that big. He really impressed me.
And he did a great job in pass coverage. Florida loves to go to their tight ends with McElhane. They didn't complete a pass to a tight end. Goolsby was non-factor, and he's a pretty good tight end.
Yeah, he's just all over the place. He's kind of what you want in that position. He's going to be really fun to watch all year. I think that defense is still going to be really good. Gary hasn't quite blown up yet, but I think he's still going to. That was a really fun game. Who's your on-the-radar player? So someone who either popped onto your radar or they were a little bit lower and now you're going to be tracking them all year.
So you picked a Michigan guy. I'll pick an Ohio State guy. How about J.K. Dobbins with 180 rush yards?
180 rush yards. Weber's sitting over there with a little bit of a hamstring injury, and now he's suddenly got to worry about his starting job.
Like, and not only that, Dobbins, he looked like a workhorse. He had 29 carries. He was making people miss. He was running guys over. He looked real. And I don't know how he wasn't a 5-star. And I know it's Indiana, but Indiana usually has a pretty good defense with Tom Allen. And he made him look silly.
Yeah, he really did. And like you said, it wasn't the 15 carries for a young freshman who busts one of them or two of them for 40-plus yards and then has this monster number. He was just the workhorse back. And there were a couple times to punch it in where they brought in a bigger back. And everyone was talking about what it means for Mike Weber, especially around here. Everyone was like, oh, Mike Weber just lost his job. I would bet that Mike Weber doesn't totally care. I think it's going to be Dobbins and Weber, and then that bigger guy is going to come punch things in. Weber still had over 1,000 yards last year. Dobbins would have to have a really good year to top that. I think he's a star. I think he's really good. He kind of lived up to the hype for that game. But it doesn't mean that Weber's a non-factor now. But my gosh, did Dobbins flash all game from start to finish.
Just another weapon for them to add. And Ohio State really struggled to throw the ball down the field. Their two big pass plays were short passes that they out-athlete Indiana. So they're going to need another running back. They're going to have to rely heavily on their run game this year.
Yeah, I was the whole time I was thinking, you know, it's okay that Weber's out because they're going to need this stable of backs and they're going to need Barrett to run a little more because the offense still does not look like it's in a good rhythm. My on-the-radar player was a guy who had a little more hype coming into the season, and we talked about him in the draft episode, Ronald Jones. We know he's good. This isn't a huge shock, but they suddenly found themselves in a battle with a team that went to a bowl last year in Western Michigan. And Jones had 160 yards. He had 9 yards per carry. So it just shows how electric he is. He was already one that I was going to be tracking, especially given USC's ranking. But it just shows that they could kind of turn around and hand the ball to him, and he had great success. And their freshman running back, Stephen Carr, got in the end zone yesterday. So their run game actually looked good, while Darnold struggled a little bit early on.
Yeah, I thought Ronald Jones looked really good. I didn't catch that game because curse you, Pac-12 Network, for not being in the South. But I was really impressed with looking at his highlights. He looked very comfortable. I also wanted to give a shout-out to Sean Dion Hamilton coming back from injury at Alabama. He looks real. He looks like a great running back – or linebacker, I'm sorry. And, like, he kind of scares me. Like, that guy was everywhere.
Yeah, Hamilton looked great. Jones looked great. Carr averaged 10 yards per carry. He just didn't get as much work. So USC's run game, for all the struggles they had yesterday, averaged 7 yards per carry overall. So it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. They play Stanford soon, so we'll get to that pick 'em.
Also, one more.
Go ahead.
Maryland wide receiver DJ Moore. He looks elite. He just burned Texas multiple times.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are some guys starting to flash, and these are the guys that we're going to be tracking all year. Who do you think needs improvement? So this can be a player, it can be a unit, someone that, listen, if your team's going to reach their potential, you got to get there for us.
Hey, ESPN, just because you make two good throws doesn't mean you're a good quarterback. Like, Jalen Hurts, like, did not look good yesterday at all.
No, he didn't, and ESPN did their classic move of, this guy's hyped already, so we need to find what he does well. And he made one long pass to Calvin Ridley. He threw an out route to Calvin Ridley that was a nice play call. And he had one really good run, and we know that he can run. But as far as passing the ball, if you look at that whole tape, there was no reason to highlight anything Jalen Hurts did with his arm. They still found a way to, of course, because the Heisman hype is already happening. But he didn't look good. And it's they won anyway. They beat the number three team in the country, and he looked like garbage. But he's still just – he can throw it deep. He can run. What else can he do in the pass game?
If you take away his 53-yard pass to Calvin Ridley for a touchdown, okay, he threw 17 times for 43 yards. That is an average of 2.5 yards per attempt.
Yeah, and I think that doesn't surprise me. And he has a rapport with Ridley, and to an extent, that's all he needs because he can also run the ball. But I think it's hinting at something that is going to have to get figured out. Alabama receivers, besides Ridley, aren't flashing yet. And it's been one game, and it's a tough secondary, but they don't have Ardarius Stewart anymore. They don't have O.J. Howard anymore to pick up a little bit of that slack. It's just Ridley right now, and they're going to need some of these guys who have been hyped for so long to start to have an impact in games.
I thought that was the worst Alabama's offense has looked since the LSU game in 2011 against that game where they only scored 6 points. I thought that was the worst offensive game they've had since then. They looked terrible, and they looked like they missed Lane Kiffin.
They did, but they also – that hurts running a little bit and then them hitting deep. So – Ridley all game was matched up on McFadden, and you and I were texting about this, and McFadden's really good, and he sort of held Ridley in check. The two catches Ridley had were when he was in the slot and was up against the safety, and when he was on the other side against a new cornerback that was not McFadden. The second they got that matchup, they had a bomb touchdown play. So there's still some of that Kiffin influence in that offense.
If Alabama thinks they're going to win a national title, and they might win the SEC with this, but if they think they can win a national title with Jalen Hurts going 10 for 18, just hitting one bomb a game, they're sorely mistaken.
Yeah, and they have the talent to where they just need to open it up some games. Maybe last night wasn't the game to do it, But I swear they need to just have a couple games where it's let's pretend he can't run. Let's pretend we don't have a great run game. Let's see what he can do, because otherwise, when you get in these really, really intense situations, they're not going to have many of them because they're good. But when you get in the Auburn game and the championship game and the playoffs, you don't know exactly what he can do for you. You're just still relying on hitting on these deep balls. So it's going to be interesting to see if they find a second receiver or if the tight end becomes that. But Hurts is still talented. But please just miss me with the complimenting of his passing after one completion.
Speaking of ESPN hype, I think you have somebody who was a product of ESPN hype as your needs improvement this week.
Yeah, my needs improvement is just the Texas defense, and they were just not – they just didn't show up yesterday. And I actually – I mean, it was Herman hype, and it was everything like that. But you know Charlie Strong had to be sitting there with a grin on his face looking around saying, see, see, this is what I was trying to deal with. And I mean, Herman, to his credit, after the game said, listen, guys – to the media, he said, I'm not going to come in here and sprinkle some pixie dust on this team and make us good. The only way we're going to get better is hard work and improving. And he's right. But there, you just didn't see many flash plays. I mean, they had some special teams. They had a tip ball go for a pick six. But besides that, Maryland, with just picking quarterbacks out of a hat, was doing whatever they wanted against the Texas defense.
Almost 300 yards rushing for Maryland. Like, that's not good. I'm also going to give a shout out to the Ohio State corners. The overall stats looked good, but I'll just say this. That Oklahoma-Ohio State game got a lot more interesting watching Richard Legault throw to Sammy Cobbs whenever he wanted to.
Yeah, especially considering Baker Mayfield's on a whole nother level. Lincoln Riley obviously can call plays. The one thing about the Ohio State game that made me like feel a little bit better about it was early on they were getting abused. Like, everything was a completion. They weren't breaking anything up. Those big guys were having their way with them. Later in the game, the corners started to find their way a little bit. That's the only reason that I think, you know, there's been so much secondary success at Ohio State under Meyer that there's still the talent there. They just need to find out how to use it, and they're going to get tested right away.
Yeah, if they didn't play Oklahoma, I would not have really mentioned it. But you know Lincoln Riley and Baker Mayfield are licking their chops.
They really are. And the linebackers are good. The pass rush is good. But if anybody's going to expose them, it's Oklahoma, who we picked as like the first or second best offense in the country on our podcast. So that's where game day is. They're coming here. And so we're going to pick that game. Let's get to the others. Let's talk about our pick 'em.
Yes, no, I'm being told that Average Joe's does not have enough players and will be forfeiting the championship match.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
So we're going to review really quickly, and then we're going to talk about next week's. So the Maryland-Texas game, we both picked Texas, but we both picked them not to cover. So we thought 18.5 points was crazy. We picked them, and I think we picked them because we didn't expect the defense to be that bad. So we can kind of move on from that one, and Texas is out of the top 25. North Carolina State versus South Carolina.
Nice call.
You picked NC State, and you picked them to cover. It was a short line. I picked South Carolina just straight up, and they ended up winning. Deebo Samuel had an awesome game, but it was close. It's not like they ran away with it.
Yeah. Jake Bentley is scary.
He's really good. He can move around. Michigan, Florida. We both picked Michigan. We picked him to cover, so we both nailed that one. We had a sense for that. FSU, Bama. We picked Bama. We picked him to cover. Faith in Bama, unfortunately. And then the other two are West Virginia, Virginia Tech, and Texas A&M, UCLA. I have a little bit more faith in West Virginia, although I love Virginia Tech. So we're going to see what happens tonight. Mm-hmm. So far, we differed a little bit, but we have an okay read of the season. It's interesting to see. So Texas is going to drop out. Who do you think is going to pop into the top 25?
I think Maryland might pop in there. I mean, that'd be somebody there. I mean, they beat them. I think that'd be fair. You might as well put them in there. Don't really know. If Georgia Tech beats Tennessee, maybe they could get in there also. I'm trying to think.
You know who I think it's going to be?
Who do you think?
I think it's going to be Notre Dame, and they're going to set up a ranked matchup.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because Notre Dame plays Georgia this week. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So Texas is obviously going to drop out. I think West Virginia, if they lose, might stay in. But I could see Notre Dame sneaking in just because, I mean, they play Georgia next. So that leads us into this pick'em. Unfortunately, with the schedule we have, I just realized that some Sundays we won't have lines yet. But especially this Sunday, because not all the week one games are done. Hopefully in the future we do have the lines to pick against.
Mm-hmm.
But so far we're just going to pick week two straight up. So the first matchup we have, we've mentioned both of these teams already, Louisville at North Carolina.
Louisville, they should win that game. Although I think Chas Stewart at quarterback should give North Carolina a better offense. But I think Louisville wins this game. It is at UNC, so kind of an odd schedule for Louisville. They went to Indianapolis to play Purdue, and then they got to go at Chapel Hill.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Louisville as well. I don't think it'll be a blowout if UNC settles on a quarterback that isn't Brandon Harris. The second game, South Carolina at Mizzou, is suddenly weirdly interesting. So who you got there?
I'll pick Will Muschamp, but I know what's going to happen. I'm going to pick him, and then he's going to blow it against Missouri, isn't he?
Well, I don't know. Like, I'm sitting here. I'm going to pick South Carolina, too, but I almost wish. Like, it's weird. This is stupid, what I'm about to say. I would feel more comfortable if you had picked Missouri.
No, that's like, fair. I mean, I don't blame you. I would have picked Missouri if Missouri State hadn't put 38 points on Missouri in the first half. I would have probably picked Missouri.
Yeah, like Missouri's going to score, but Muschamp has an okay defense. And God, if South Carolina's going to score 40 some points against Missouri, I think they're going to win. So that's why I'm going with them. But suddenly that's an interesting matchup. A huge matchup. Two teams that had a lot of success week one against lesser opponents. Now you got the matchup with each other. Auburn at Clemson, so it's in Death Valley.
I'm going to pick Clemson, but I think it's going to be super close. I think it's going to be a great game. Maybe not super close, but I think it's going to be a game going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Clemson as well. I tried to watch some of that game. The Auburn had tons of success running the ball. Stidham never really got into like his rhythm, but he didn't look bad. He threw one bad interception, but that's going to happen. He was eager, I think. Clemson looked really good. I still think that defensive line is going to be a problem. So we're both picking Clemson there, and the home field advantage is real. Georgia at Notre Dame.
I'm going to let you pick this one first. I'm curious to get your answer.
I am going to pick Georgia.
Okay, so my assumption is Jacob Eason is going to be out, so I'm picking Notre Dame, actually.
I was close on it anyway. It's one where I want to see if Kirby Smart can coach. I still do. Notre Dame looked good, and Wimbush looked really good. They have decent running backs and receivers, so they're legit. And I do think this will be a top 25 matchup starting on Monday or Tuesday. Notre Dame at home, that obviously makes a difference. But let's just see if Kirby Smart can coach. And I'm going to see if Georgia's defense can play up a little bit. I think they're going to find success running the ball.
If Eason's healthy, I might change that. But Notre Dame's offense did look good. They had 606 yards against Temple, who was good last year. I mean, Temple had a good defense and had 422 yards rushing. So I think Notre Dame's offense shouldn't be an issue, and I think they'll have enough to score. Surprisingly enough, Notre Dame had 3 100-yard rusher, and Brandon Wimbush wasn't efficient necessarily throwing the ball. He did throw a pick, but he's super explosive.
Yeah, they have a lot of talent there. That's the one I feel the least confident about going against the home team. Oklahoma at Ohio State.
I'm going to shock you, and this isn't a biased pick, to be honest. I think Richard Legault having that much success against Ohio State corners, I don't think that's going to be fixed in 1 week. I'm actually going to pick Oklahoma. I think Baker Mayfield gets the job done.
So I'm going to pick Ohio State, and part of the reason is that I still have faith in the pass rush to really, really, really get it rolling. I think those guys coming off the edge will give a little bit of problem despite Orlando Brown being really good. The main thing is that I think that the corners are going to be a little bit improved, and I think they're going to handle Mark Andrews a little better. He went off last game, and obviously it was a lesser opponent, but I think Jerome Baker and those guys can handle that tight end situation a little more. They're still replacing D.D. Westbrook and those two running backs. Coming up here and winning is a tough task. Mayfield's the guy to do it because he has the attitude to do it. But I think it's going to be Ohio State, and game day is going to be really exciting to watch. I don't know exactly where they're doing it yet. I'll probably find out throughout the week, but it's going to be super exciting. That's kind of where we thought it would be. So we're different on that one as well, going with the road team. And then the final one, which is one of the biggest matchups of the year in this conference, is Stanford at USC.
I was going to pick this even before USC struggled with Western Michigan. I think Stanford gets USC despite it being in Los Angeles.
I actually am going to pick Stanford too. That probably shouldn't surprise anyone. I love them. The one thing I'm concerned about is I don't know exactly how Stanford's going to look against the run, and we know that USC can run the ball. But I think, again, USC is a little overrated. I always like Stanford. Either USC is going to wake up and win at home, or Stanford's going to start their little run. So we're picking the same there, but again, I don't feel – I'm excited to see the lines on these. I'll say that. So you went with the road team at Ohio State. I went with the road team at Notre Dame, and that's the two we differ on.
Yeah, and I don't feel too confident about Oklahoma, Ohio State, but I think Baker Mayfield can throw – I still think Ohio State's going to win the Big Ten, by the way. That doesn't change that. But I think Oklahoma's got enough they can beat them in that game. Daniel – it's 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon is when we're recording. We are 30 hours away from Tennessee football.
We are. And just given everything that happened yesterday, it's kind of cool that we have the Monday night to ourselves, but my gosh, I'm ready to get it here. When we started preparing for this, we started to say, you know, do we need to go into deep detail on what we expect from our offense and from their offense? Like, we kind of know that stuff. We're just ready to get going.
Can we just play on a Saturday for once? Like, I would like to just play on a Saturday afternoon so I can not have to wait. I mean, I know we had Thursday night last year. We had Sunday night a couple times before that. But I'm ready just to see what Tennessee can do. I'm really excited to see Quentin Dormady. It feels like this could be a big year for Tennessee program-wise. I know last year was supposed to be, but injuries derailed that. It's going to be really interesting. And Georgia Tech, they're not so good that it's like Tennessee's going to lose, but it's going to be a competitive football game, and that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be a game where we can learn stuff, and hopefully a game where some players start to flash. I'm excited about it. We're both predicting a win, but for the overall season, we're a little different. So the most different we've ever been. It's going to be interesting to see how it develops, and just – as a reminder for our own excitement, we have West Virginia VT tonight. We have Texas A&M UCLA tonight. I have no idea where they're on at the same time. They should have been back-to-back. But those are still going to be exciting games.
That's a national travesty that they're both on at the same time. Like, Donald Trump should step in and declare that somebody should have had to play at 3:30. Like, this is a national travesty. But I don't control the schedule. But it's going to be, I think Tennessee, it's going to be really fun. Monday's going to just drag and drag waiting for that game. But once it gets here, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. Some players started to flash this weekend. We were glad to hop on and talk about that. We'll come back next week with probably a review of the Georgia Tech game and a review of Indiana State, which hopefully is not a concern at all. Let's get this team healthy. Let's get going, and let's get Dormady rolling tomorrow night.
Thanks, guys, for listening. Go Vols.